We live in a culture of very heightened political correctness. And when we look back at the Gospels, it is sometimes quite shocking to us to hear the way that people spoke in other times and in other ages. I know that myself, having grown up the first 10 years of my life growing up in Cuba, things don't translate well at all from one language to another. I still remember my mother, who tried to be a very proper woman, and every time anybody sneezes, you are supposed to say "God bless you." Well, in Latin countries, you say "Jesus." And so I remember Mom, you know, everywhere we went, "Jesus, Jesus." And she had no idea that in the United States, that's considered kind of a using God's name in vain. Because in Latin countries, it's the exact opposite. That whenever you see something, first of all, when you sneeze, you're supposed to say "Jesus." And then, you know, anytime the word "Jesus, Mary, and Joseph," we're not supposed to say that. You go, when you hear people say, "Jesus, Mary, and Joseph," you use God's name in vain. Where exactly in Latin America, it was the opposite. You would always say, when anything was out of place, you would say, "Jesus, Maria, Jose." And it was considered a blessing. So, it's even in our own modern age, it's not easy. So it's not very easy to hear Jesus today in this situation referred to the woman as a dog. And it was considered also not very pleasant in his own time, although it was common usage, because in the ancient world, especially the Jewish ancient world, the Jews, and even the Jews of today, as I have learned from working with my friend Rabbi Stuart Federo on the radio station, the mission of the Jews to their own consciousness is to be a people set apart, but not set apart for the sake of the fact that everybody else is no good, but just set apart to be an example to the rest of the people of the earth of how God's chosen people is supposed to behave. Now, in the ancient world, there was this need of separation because the constant push of the dominant culture was to assimilate the Jews and to make the Jews do exactly what the rest of the pagans were doing. And they referred to the pagans as dogs, in other words, meaning that they are not clean. The concept of ritual cleanliness and being elected by God. So anyway, it sounds to our snowflake culture, it sounds very jarring. But what Jesus is expressing is something that he was very conscious of. You see, when Jesus does miracles, the miracles are not done because he feels sorry for people. He does sympathize and empathize with the suffering that is going on. But one of the things you have to understand is that Jesus did not heal everyone who was going through problems in his time. His miracles were not that the character of just going around healing people because he was nice. Otherwise, look, if Jesus would have healed everyone, we would have had historical reports, because hundreds and thousands of people would have migrated and historians would have recorded it. So we know that his miracles were not done for the reason of just coming around and healing everyone. His miracles, especially as and you can see it in the Gospel of John, are called signs. And so, why signs? Because what Jesus was communicating was the fact that what he was saying was backed up by the authority to say what he was saying. That's the issue. Who are you to say, look, any one of us, I could go and do a funeral at, say, at Forest Park down in Westheimer Cemetery, and I could stand in front of a grave and say, stand up, be raised, and we would be there all day, okay? Because nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. I can even say it with super amount of authority. You don't do it. Nothing's going to happen. Because I have no authority to say that. So anybody can say anything. But what would happen if you were in the presence of someone who said, come out of the grave. And all of a sudden, a guy who's been dead 3 days comes out of the grave. You would freak out. You know you would freak out. And then you would say, who is this guy? Who is this guy? Notice what's happening. People can say all kinds of things, but all of a sudden when this guy does it, okay, or, you know, my other favorite miracle is when Jesus is, when the apostles and Jesus are on a ship on the Lake of Galilee, and there's a storm, and Jesus is asleep, you know, and he's snoring away, you know, and this, the ship's going everywhere. And they wake him up and they say, don't you care that we're about to drown? And Jesus, I can always imagine Jesus waking up and just, oh. And he says, oh, you of little faith. And then he looks at the storm and he says, stop it. And he goes, now if somebody did that in front of you, okay, and said, oh, stop it. Notice he didn't do a rain dance. He didn't do, you know, a stop it dance, any magical dance. Just, oh, stop it. And he does it, okay? So the very first thing is that Jesus' miracles are meant to communicate and to authenticate who he is and what authority he has to say this, okay? Now, then comes the whole issue of the mission of Jesus. Notice what's happening in this gospel. Jesus is up north in the northern part of Israel. And the northern part of Israel was a part that had been conquered by several foreign armies. And so they were called the Lost Tribes of the House of Israel. And so when Jesus is up there, there's been a lot of hundreds of years of occupation that has occurred. And so the Canaanites and the Jews had intermarried, and there was a kind of a Jewish presence, but not much, and it was all fairly pagan territory. And so here comes this woman to ask Jesus, for, please, my daughter, I need her help. Now, remember, Jesus has not come to just do miracles for everybody. His miracles, remember this, his miracles are meant as a sign to the house of Israel that the Messiah has come. They are not an end in itself. And so this woman, who is a Canaanite, says, first of all, the apostle, she keeps screaming, okay, which if my kid were hurt and were in trouble and I know somebody, there was a way to help them, I'd be screaming too. So she's screaming at him, help us. And Jesus doesn't pay any attention to her. Now, why he did not We don't know exactly. But he knows. He doesn't send her away himself. He kind of ignores her. And then the apostles say, oh, get rid of her. And Jesus says, he states his mission. I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, not to the Canaanites. Jesus is very focused on his mission. Salvation will come to the whole world, but it comes through the Jews. Okay? It's not just to everybody. Jesus doesn't just come up and say, hey, everybody open your Bible. Anybody. It doesn't work that way. He comes in through the Jews. And so he says, I have come to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And then the woman says something amazing. And then Jesus continues to say, it is not right that I should take the food of the children and give it to the dogs, meaning to the Gentiles, to those who are pagans and worship idols. And that's when the woman says, even the dogs can eat what falls from their master's table. And that's when Jesus is impressed. And he grants her request. Now, the other thing that came to mind when I was reading this was a concept that a man by the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. You may not have heard of him. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a Protestant minister in Germany during the Third Reich. And Bonhoeffer was he wrote one of the great books of Christianity called The Cost of Discipleship. And Bonhoeffer was working against Hitler and making sure, because a lot of the churches, not the Catholic Church, although some of them, but a lot of the Protestant churches adapted to Hitler and the German message. Bonhoeffer was one of those who did not, and he was fighting against the message of the Third Reich. Bonhoeffer was arrested, and eventually, right before the war ended, Bonhoeffer was hanged by the Nazis. But Bonhoeffer developed a concept that has always appealed to me, and that I think is important for us as Christians, especially Christians in what I would call a soft culture. We live in a soft culture, meaning not many demands are made out of us. Okay? I always get a kick when people tell me that something is inconvenient. And the reason I get a kind of a sad kick out of it is because if you look at the word inconvenient, it means not coming along with me. In, not, conveniat, come with me. So something that's inconvenient means here's my schedule. If you want to fit in, you fit into my schedule. I'm not changing my schedule to fit in with you. And so for a lot of us, religion becomes convenient. We want it to fit into our lifestyle. So what happens? And that is, what happens is that we dumb down our faith so that it's not demanding, that it's convenient. It comes along with our lifestyle. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer called that cheap grace. And I think that's a concept that we should pay attention to. Cheap grace. I was listening to a talk by a great theologian, and he was making the comment that in many of our churches, we have pictures of what he called sweet Jesus. Sweet Jesus is, and a lot of us have done this, even we in all of our religious education programs, and sometimes even we priests, we present to you a Jesus who doesn't make too many demands on us. a Jesus that is convenient, a Jesus that, you know, whatever we do, yeah, it's okay. I understand. I always imagine, and it drives me crazy whenever we do programs or calls for people to help us, like with teaching CCE or with doing anything at the parish. We stand up here sometimes, and I just want to pull out, if I had hair, I would pull it out. But we stand up here and we start saying, if any of you have any time, would you consider giving us some of your time? I know it's inconvenient, but would you consider giving some of your time to spread the gospel? Can you imagine Jesus going up to the disciples while they're with their nets and going, excuse me, would you all have some time to devote to being my disciples? I don't want to be inconvenient. Could you imagine them doing that? That's not what Jesus did. Jesus was demanding. And he said, if you don't, who else in human history says, if you love your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your son or your daughter more than me, you're not worthy of me. Now notice, he doesn't say you're not worthy of God. You're not worthy of me. Right? And when Jesus speaks to the scribes and to the Pharisees, he doesn't mince words. You know, I don't think it's very sweet Jesus when you call somebody a brood of vipers, or you call somebody a whitewashed tombs, or one of my favorites is when he confronts the religious of his own age, and he says to the scribes and the Pharisees, you travel land and sea to make a convert. And when they're done, you're done with them, they're twice as fit for hell as you are yourselves. Remember, religion is not always good. Okay? If religion doesn't make you better, if it doesn't challenge you, if it doesn't call you to be better, then it's cheap grace. It's grace that, there's that old saying that I always enjoyed, and that is, God made us in his image and likeness, and we never cease returning the favor. You know, we make him in our image and likeness, and we want to make him kind of be convenient for us. And so Jesus does not make it convenient for this woman. He's not giving away, you know, miracles by the dozen. But when this woman insists, Jesus cannot but be impressed with a person who takes this seriously, and a person who knows that a lot is at stake and they're willing to put themselves on the line. And when this woman says, even the dogs receive the crumbs that fall from the master's table, Jesus can't pass that up. And that is a human being that is willing to even accept an insult and move forward. And I think that's something that this friend of mine always says, that in every church there should be a picture of the loving, kind Jesus. But we should have in every church an icon of the really angry Jesus. You know, because it's something that we don't remember. And remember, one of the great gifts of the Holy Spirit is fear of the Lord. Fear of the Lord. Fear, although when it gets out of hand, is not good, but fear can be a very good thing. I guarantee you that Houston is a lot safer when I'm driving and I see a police car behind me. Okay? I am a lot safer driver, okay, when I see that little bubble, that little bar on the top. Okay? So it's a good thing. And how many times do we not do something that we want to do, or we do something that we need to do because of fear of the consequences? If there's no fear, we would be in trouble. And so I think that the gospel today is a kind of a lesson in reality. A lesson in reality, first of all, for me, the most important part is the concept of cheap grace. There's no such thing as cheap grace. We can think that there is, but there really isn't. You know, God, I don't claim ever to even understand, even though I have a degree in theology. We just don't know ultimately how God behaves. I do know that He is impressed when we don't treat Him as an afterthought. When we consider Him to be the central factor in the decisions of our lives. That's why, to me, I always like the little saying, which I'm still thinking about having tattooed. I don't have any tattoos. Okay? And I don't think the cardinal would particularly like, you know, me to get a tattoo. But the older I get, the less I care. You know? For those of you who are young, the older you get, the more you say, eh. You know? And you do what you think is right without figuring out who's going to be mad. But I'm thinking of having it tattooed in my forehead and backwards so that when I look in the mirror, I can read it. And it will say, you have to live your life for an audience of one. One. If you try to please people, and that's, notice this woman. This woman does not care if she looks ridiculous. This woman does not care anything about anything else but having Jesus ask, think about her daughter. She's willing to put herself in any situation. She's living her life focused on Jesus at that moment. And I think that that's what impresses Jesus. Not cheap grace. She doesn't go and says, well, I gave it a try. It's over. She sticks to it. And I think that's something that we can learn a lot from. When you put so much focus on your life in God's eyes, that yes, what people say about you is okay, and you take it into account. But ultimately, every single decision is not based on who might like you and who might not. Every single decision is based, what will God think of this? That's what I think Jesus is emphasizing. And believe me, that is not cheap grace. It cost Dietrich Bonhoeffer on the last few days of World War II. The Nazis paraded him outside in the cold, naked, and they brought him to the gallows, and they killed him. Believe me, for Dietrich Bonhoeffer, as well as for this woman, grace did not come cheap.